The Popmatic Podcast for August 2013. It is the dog days of summer. Joining me today are
Mike,
Crystal,
Amanda,
Bill,
Clint.
Clint is here. I'm not going to say who I am because they did a whole segment about me last time, so I don't want to make it to be all about me. But like I was saying earlier, it is the dog days of summer and the dog days of summer reading. What, you thought you could just quit reading because the summer reading contest was over? No, book faux pas. You got to read all summer. This is what it's about. And if you don't read all year, why are you listening to this? This is a library podcast. I mean, seriously. So in this episode, we're going to talk about the best things that we read during summer reading, maybe the things we wished we read, maybe just the things we did during summer reading, because you don't actually have to read books to do summer reading anymore, because books are only half the story. You can just come to the library and do stuff, like hang out with a barefoot farmer or other stuff, download stuff, or see a puppet festival.
I want to do other stuff. That sounds
make
fun.
Balloon animals.
Ooh.
You can do all kinds of stuff, and if you did some of that for summer reading, that's cool. But you got to keep going. We're going to tell you what you can keep reading, and it's going to be great. And also, I just kind of feel guilty that we didn't mention summer reading in the June episode. I talked about some other stuff, talked about the puppet festival and everything, didn't mention summer reading. I feel, you know, guilty. You know, Catherine, if you're listening, it was awesome this year. Okay, cool. But I'm sorry I didn't mention it. And it was really, the joke that I wanted to tell for the outro, which we already recorded. Are you listening if you're confused already? Wait, I mixed that up too. In the outro, I wanted to tell this joke about, hey, the last podcast was late because there was an international puppet festival. But that would be absurd. That would never happen. Where did it happen, right? That never happened. Well, that actually happened. It's strange. That's because the library is awesome. Besides puppet festivals and summer reading contests, other stuff is happening at the library. Sometimes people come just to read books, but other stuff too, like, for instance,
the movies at Maine. So please come Saturday, August 10th, 2013 at 2 p.m. in our Maine auditorium, and this is the Nashville Public Library downtown, 615 Church Street, because we are honored to present a rare screening of the independent film Stony Island, a largely forgotten gem that captures the culture of Chicago's music scene in the 70s through the story of an up-and-coming rhythm and blues band working hard to realize their dream. Andrew Davis, the man who brought you The Fugitive, director of Stony Island, not only gave us special permission to screen this classic, but he also talked to myself about the making of the movie and his filmmaking career at large. So please listen to that in our Legends of Film podcast. And just remember, Saturday, August 10th, 2013, 2 p.m., Main Auditorium for Stony Island. One-time screening only, folks. Be there or be square.
So I wanted to pitch a book club that I've started here at the Main Library. It's called the Killer Thrillers Book Club.
Ooh.
And we meet on the first Thursday of the month from 12 to 1 p.m. And we are reading mysteries, thrillers, crime novels, both classic and new. I'm not sure when this podcast will get posted, but we are meeting Thursday, August 1st to discuss Downriver by John Hart. But September 5th, we are discussing a novel by the name of The Informationist. And let me tell you, the main character could probably win at chess if she played Lisbeth Salander. So come back for the Killer Thrillers Book Club. And if you want more info, you can email me at crystal.dean@nashville.gov.
So the lead character is playing Lisbeth Salander in chess.
No, I'm just saying. If they were...
I would read that.
I'd read that.
If they were to play chess, I think she'd almost beat Lisbeth.
Almost. She would, yeah. Actually, so
she might. I mean, it depends.
It'd be a good game.
If Lisbeth hadn't had any coffee...
It'd be a tie. Okay.
Might be.
I get you. That's cool. I want to make a joke about like the leader of a mystery thrillers book club getting murdered, and then someone has to solve it. But that would be weird, right?
That'd be kind of creepy now.
Weird.
Okay.
Yeah. Kind of chiller.
It'd be weird if it's the person that did the killing was the person that hosts the other book club at the same library, because you stole all that person's book club members. I don't know.
The other book club leader sitting right next to him.
Oh, yeah.
Darn it.
Series.
Totally, right?
Yeah.
All these happened when Parnassus opened. So the one thing I want to talk about related to books, too, and this isn't coming up for a month or two, but the Southern Festival of Books lineup has been announced, and I'm sure it'll change a little bit the closer we get. But I'll put a link in there if you want to see all the authors that are coming. As usual, it's pretty cool. I'm excited about Paolo Bacigalupi. He's going to be here, which is pretty rad, who wrote the book The Wind-Up Girl, which I think I talked about on the podcast once. Dog Days of Summer. What's the best thing you read during summer reading, Bill?
Well, I found the perfect summer read for me. It was The Enemy by Lee Child, which is the eighth book in the ever-popular Jack Reacher series, and I'm just now getting started. I mean, what I'm saying, I've just started the series, and I started on the eighth book, which is the pre-equel. It follows Jack Reacher when he was an elite military cop before he became the wandering loner. The reason why I started on the eighth book is because I wanted to see where the Reacher character came from. And what impresses me about Lee Child's writing, and I would like to state again, this is the only one of his books that I've read, Lee Child has created a complex character, a loner hero who doesn't need material items, but he does have a need to see justice done. Also, a lot of people might think that this is a man's book, you know, a manly man's book, and I just want to state that there are several strong female characters in the book. The novel is a twisty tale with deception and murder in the military-industrial complex. This was my first Lee Child book, but it won't be my last. That's what I'm read this summer that I've enjoyed.
Did you watch the movie?
As a matter of fact, I did, and that kind of got
started
me primed, and it was just called Jack Reacher. It was based on the book called One Shot, and I watched it, and I enjoyed it. There was a big hoo-ha that, you know, Jack Reacher in the book is 6'5", and, you know.
Tom Cruise is not.
And Tom Cruise is not.
5'6".
But it's a good movie, but, you know, I can see what the true fans were talking about, because Lee Child's got quite a following with these books. So, like I say, that was the first one. Now I'm going to start at the beginning, which I think is The Killing Hand, and I'm going to go from there. Amanda, what are you reading?
Well, one of my favorite things to do is for summer reading is to read at the beach. And, folks, I tried to read at the beach for you this year, but between the lightning and the 40-knot wind coming directly off the Gulf, it just didn't happen. But
too much sand in your eye.
Yeah, you turn a page and you crunch some sand, and you turn a page and you crunch some sand. So I had to give up my book at the beach dreams this year, but that doesn't make the book any less good. I've been a Stephanie Plum fan for a couple years now, not from the beginning, but I have read all of her books. And so I was excited when I saw that Janet Ivanovich was going to have this new series coming out. I was a little concerned because she's got a co-writer, Lee Goldberg, on this, and I kind of feel like she's doing the James Patterson, hire a writer to actually write the book and then just sell your name and take the money and go to the beach and read a book. But Lee Goldberg is involved with the Monk series with Tony Shalhoub, so he's a pretty decent writer in his own right. And this first book in the series is called The Heist, and it basically stars Kat O'Hare as an FBI agent. She's the, you know, dogged cop that chases everyone down to the ends of the earth. She's chasing Nicholas Fox, who is, you know, the ladies' man, con man figure, and she catches him. That's not a spoiler alert because it happens like right in the beginning of the book. And then the FBI forces them to team up to catch even bigger criminals. So it was a great summer read. I mean, it didn't change my life in any way, but it was enjoyable. It kind of reminded me of the TV show Leverage, or what's the White Collar, where you kind of have the con man working with the good guys, and then they put together this weird team of people. And I really hope that as we go through the series that we get to learn more about their team they put together, because they've got some pretty interesting characters. So if you are looking for a great beach read, I can guarantee that this book was fun in the basement of the library when I read it on my lunch hour, so I'm sure it will be good on a beach too. But that was The Heist by Janet Ivanovich. So Crystal, what are you reading?
Well, the best thing I read for summer reading is a book called The Enchanted Life of Adam Hope. And it's the debut novel by Rhonda Riley. And I know I'm going to sound like I'm exaggerating, but this is one of the most profound and captivating stories that I've read in a long time. So let me tell you a little bit about it. The book starts in 1944 on a farm in North Carolina, or North Kakalaki, as the natives say. And the book ends in a small town in Florida, the year 2000. So the main character, the voice of the story, the narrator, is Evelyn Rowe. She's 17, 18 years old. She's single-handedly managing the family farm. And on a stormy night, she finds a stranger buried in the clay dirt near an apple tree. Now, this is where I can't really say any more about the story, lest I ruin your reading experience. But prepare yourself for tenderness, tragedy, secrets, and passion, being one with nature. But most of all, this book is about love. Love, love, love. So, if that sounds like your kind of a thing, remember The Enchanted Life of Adam Hope.
So the person in the clay, is that the person who's one with nature?
I'm not going to say.
I wanted to say about James Patterson and his co-authors. Mm-hmm. James Patterson has said in interviews that he, the other person writes like the first draft of the, you know, and then they give it to him, and then he James Pattersonizes it, right? So make sure it has that feel that he wants. So
I hope they have a good benefits package.
It just sounds like what you said about, I mean, your book, that Rhonda Riley probably doesn't do that.
No, I don't think so. This is the first book she's written. She looks like she's in her 50s. So this is, wow, I just can't say enough about this book.
Is it a long book?
You'll probably read it and hate it. No.
That is a given.
It's probably 300 or so pages. Normal. I read it as an e-book, so I tend to lose track.
Yeah. Percentages instead of page numbers.
Right, exactly.
Who created that, seriously?
It's Amazon.
It's the worst.
Jeff Bezos.
Fills me with rage every time.
Oh, I'm supposed to talk now. The one, you know, you recommended to me, what was that one book by Sarah Glahn? What was it called?
Claire DeWitt.
Claire DeWitt.
She's got a new one coming out.
And that same series?
The same character.
Yeah, Claire DeWitt. That was pretty good. I like that. But you know what? Yeah. We disagreed about Wild. I mean, you really liked Wild a lot, and I was just kind of
that's right.
And you didn't care for Wild either.
Wild wasn't in Rockmore World.
So anyway, I'm just going to go through what the book I really liked a lot, my favorite of my summer reading, was No Regrets, or Writings on Scott Walker, edited by Rob Young. And actually, the one thing that I think I probably talk about too much, not Philip K. Dick, is actually Scott Walker. So I don't know how popular Scott Walker is, but this was like sort of the book that I was saving to read during the summer, because it was just essays about a musician that I like, and it was really good. And it covers a lot of those periods in Scott Walker's career that the documentary that came to Nashville about Scott Walker, 30th Century Man, there was a lot of gaps in there that they didn't talk about. And each chapter in No Regrets is about a specific period in Scott Walker's career, including the time when he was drinking a lot and making bad albums, or like totally reclusive, not doing interviews. So it was really fun to read. And the one essay, A Dandy in Aspic by Ian Penman, is just like really creative piece of nonfiction about what it would have been like being Scott Walker, being drunk all the time and making a bunch of throwaway records. It was really, I hope it ends up in some best of year-end essay compilations. It was really good. Now, if you're not into Scott Walker, you probably don't care, though I think if you watch the 30th Century Man documentary, you might find yourself interested in Scott Walker like I did, and that was a recommendation that Clint gave me many years ago, and it has altered my musical landscape since. So, but another book that I think is probably of more interest to everyone that was surprisingly good is The Bible, A Biography by Karen Armstrong. And I think Karen Armstrong is kind of like the people's theologian. She tends to write books about Buddhism or Christianity or Islam, and then explains it all. And I just picked this up because it's really hard to find really good, like, nonfiction audiobooks sometimes. And this was surprisingly really good. It was really short, and it's not so much a history of the Bible as, like, how the Bible has been interpreted, like, way back from the very, very extremely, like, beginning, like, you know, no Christianity up until the present time. It was read by Josephine Bailey, and I think the material could be hard to actually sort of enliven vocally, but Josephine Bailey did a real good job. She didn't do the sort of slow reader nonfiction thing, which I don't like. It's good and short, too. It was a good book. Now, what I really wanted to read and didn't get a chance to, the book that I had saved for the beach, right, was Memoirs of Hadrian by Marguerite Yourcenar, and I know that all of you are really, really jonesing to read that book.
Yes. That was second round on mine.
It's in my stack.
So what these are the fictional memoirs of Hadrian the Roman Emperor, and it's a book that my book club probably is not going to pick to read, and I've just saved it for, like, I mean, probably years to read this book. And, of course, I was on vacation, and I didn't read it. You know,
it never works out.
Yeah, I just ended up looking at riffraff videos on YouTube, which I'll explain in the next segment, so... That's what I wanted to read.
See, I thought you were going to say, hey, guys, have you heard of this great new book I heard of called The Bible?
I know.
For a second there.
No way, I've heard of that. It's long. So,
it's a bestseller.
You could read along with The Bible, a biography. You could just read The Bible or listen to audio version of The Bible. I think that'd be the same experience you would get if you listened to Scott Walker records while you were reading No Regrets. You know, because then it was actually, and I wanted to make this point too, like the later Scott Walker period that the library has, like The Drift and Bish Bosh, those are like really, really seriously like difficult abstract albums. No Regrets will help you make sense of them. So go for it. And the Bible doesn't make any sense. The Bible, a biography, might have a smidge. I don't know.
It is shorter.
Yeah, it is shorter. Wow. So what you got, Mike?
Wow, very exciting. Breaking news. All right. I never, like, you know, I don't catch up with, like, these bestsellers until, like, many years after the fact, sometimes centuries. And it's pretty cool that, like, I'm ahead of the curve. I read The Cuckoo's Calling by Robert Galbraith.
Woo!
But secretly, J.K. Rowling. That means I've broken my streak, and so I've actually read some J.K. Rowling.
Let's go back for people that don't know.
So apparently somebody somewhere, I forget what the shadowy group commissioned this, but somebody did a linguistic analysis of this book and discovered that the only person who possibly could have written it was J.K. Rowling. And she's like, yeah, it was me. Fine. She wanted to bring out a book without the baggage of her name. Kind of like how Stephen King did, like Richard Bachman. And apparently it worked for about 3 months or something before people caught on. But...
people are smart.
It's one of those.
So that's really how they found her out, was someone.
Yeah.
They had to have a hunch, though, first, right?
Somebody, the article I read originally, they didn't say who commissioned the whatever these computer guys. Like, you know, somebody must have, you know, had a hunch that. But who that
somebody
was,
somebody
with
money had a hunch.
Yeah,
that.
Yeah. That Rowling.
Because I could have had a hunch. She's not making us enough money.
Yeah, I was like, you know, as a cataloger, I get a bunch of books in my cart, and I was like, well, this book looks cool, you know, and it's supposed to be like a modern, you know, take on the detective thing, and then it's like, oh, whoa, okay, cool. Book I've read, it's in the news. Anyway.
So it was a crime novel. How was it?
That's right. It's a crime novel. Perfect for your spiffy new book.
Yeah.
Basically, it begins with the death of a supermodel named Lula Landry, who dies by falling out window, falling out window.
Happens.
You know, defenestration, I believe. And basically her brother believes it was murder. So he hires a detective named Cormoran Strike to find out whether it was murder most foul. Now, the only downside to me about this book is that, like, Strike kind of comes off for most of the book as kind of like a sad sack loser type. Like, you know, he broke up with his wife, his business is failing, he had a lousy upbringing, hence the weird name. You know, he's missing a leg from the war. He's living in his office. So things are going pretty bad. You know, I kind of like, with a lot of detective books, they kind of like make it to where like being a detective is the only thing in their life that's worth anything. And I kind of thought she may have gone a bit too far with this for a while. But then about midway through the book, it kind of picks up and he becomes like less of a, you know, he gains some self-confidence and stuff. I liked that Landry, the supermodel, like actually seems like a person. Like she's written really well, and she seems like a sympathetic young woman who notices that the people around her have ulterior motives for being her friend. You know, it's like, oh,
you're cool. I'm gorgeous. None of these people want to be around me.
What cares? I'm a super millionaire. My favorite character in the book is named Robin. She becomes Strike's secretary, and she's like the dream employee. Like, I've always tried to be like good at my job, you know, the stated job, you know, like Boston was US. Okay, I'll do that, you know, whatever. But she like goes above and beyond. It's like, oh, I took the liberty of calling this guy that you didn't think of calling, you know, and using an alias in a different voice at a payphone across the street. And he said this, this, and this. And I'm all like, whoa. She's amazing. And I like that she was like so enchanted by the, like, you know, the idea of working for a real life private eye that she wants to stick around, which abused me because, you know, in real life, most private eyes are kind of scummy. I didn't guess the ending, which was good. Always a plus. You know, it seems like a lot of, like, movies and stuff. Like, I remember watching The 12 Monkeys with my sister, and I was like, oh, it's this. And she's like, what? It's been 3 minutes since it started. And I'm like, right. You know, it's getting worse as they get older, too. But overall, I think I had a really good time. And the mystery was intriguing enough for me to, like, you know, because for a while there, I was like, I don't know. But then, toward the end, I started, you know, it's really cool. It doesn't reinvent the genre, but I had a good time. And I would like to, you know, I haven't actually read anything else about J.K. Rowling, but I watched a few of the Harry Potter movies. And there are some elements for the movies that are in the book, but I can't
Quidditch,
give it away.
Quidditch, right?
Oh, yeah, I bet they play
that's
Quidditch.
Right.
That's good.
Yeah, it turns
that's
out,
what gave it away.
Turns out that Strike has like a little scar above his eye or whatever.
Spent $7.5 yeah. million to figure out that Quidditch was there all along.
The Robin character kind of reminds me of Lois Abiba in season 3 of Torchwood, if you've seen Torchwood.
Kind of halfway through the first season.
You got to skip right to season 3. It's a 5-episode miniseries. It's totally worth it.
Okay. And so it actually gets good at some point?
She's Lois Abiba is like the super secretary that decides that she does want to work for cool. Torchwood. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. And I don't want to talk about that anymore because I've talked about that before on the show. But season 3, Torchwood, is amazing. Children of Earth. That's all you got.
In conclusion, good read.
Awesome.
Four cool. stars.
Sounds better than Casual Vacancy, which was not a good read.
Yeah, so. I've heard nothing but bad things.
Yeah, I met no one that liked that book.
It was kind of soggy. You know what? I think the characters were good, though, in that book, because my book club met when they talked about that book. We had a lot to talk about, even though no one really liked the book as a whole. So, you know, hey, when you're real famous, you don't need an editor, and you can publish as many books as you want, and as many
That's
names as
mean.
You want, whatever, you know?
Enough. Okay.
I was intrigued by, you know, the writing, because I heard that she was not that great a writer, and I thought it was, I mean, you know, it's a mystery, so it's not like, you know, it didn't break, like, reinvent the wheel or anything, but I thought it was, like, actually pretty well written. I may actually try this Harry Potter.
There were finger quotes there, following along at home.
Oh, yeah.
It's the latest thing.
Yeah, you
Harry
know.
Potter,
see,
he's pretty cool.
I haven't read those. Those were bestsellers, what, 10 years ago? Yeah. See, that's my usual speed.
Yeah, you're right on pace. You're good.
Yeah, yeah.
So, Bill, what's tickling your fancy? Is it dead or alive?
Well, it's both, a little bit of both. The fourth season of The Walking Dead will start in October. So now would be a good time to catch up on the first two seasons. I'm sure the library will get the third season, hint, hint. Anyway, the Walking Dead is a series I have yet to grow tired of. I really enjoy it. And the first season has only 6 episodes, so it's just sort of a sample, so you can test it, see if you like it or not. So my recommendation is give it a try. And Amanda, what's tickling your fancy?
Not The Walking Dead. I can't even watch the commercials for that. So I think it's funny how you go through phases where nothing is good that you read, and then everything is good that you read. And I'm kind of in an everything is good right now. I actually have 3 books that I'm working on that I kind of wish I was reading instead of here talking to you guys about them. But
ouch.
That's okay. I still love you. So my car book right now that I listen to in my car on the way to work is Affliction. It's the new Laurel K. Hamilton book. I mean, she kind of went through a phase where her books were not so great, and it seems like she's kind of coming out of it a little bit. So I'm about 5 discs in and listening to it on my car stereo.
And is this Anita Blake?
This is Anita Blake.
Okay.
Yeah. And
that's
number 22 in the Anita Blake series. And so Micah's dad is sick and has some kind of zombie flesh-eating disease, and so we've gone home to see if we can help. So that one's good so far. Then my Kindle book that I'm reading, I'm actually reading Gone Girl because I feel like Mike that I'm, you know, it's been out for a while, so why not read it? Because everyone's talking about it. But I'm about halfway through that one, and I'm still kind of puzzled, but I kind of like it. So I'm going to keep going, and we'll see how that goes. But it's very suspenseful. And then my lunch book, which is actually a book that I touch with my fingers, is the new Dan Brown Inferno book. And that one was very frustrating for about the first 50 pages, but now it's like Dan Brown does. It started to go, and now I don't want to put it down, and I want to keep reading it, and then I want to go to Florence and see all the stuff he's talking about. So three books, all excellent. Crystal, go.
No, just a brief comment.
Yes.
You'll listen to a book with flesh-eating
bacteria,
which you won't watch.
Yes, zombies in that
I can't.
Book.
It's not – I don't like zombies that well in general, but like The Walking Dead is just – it's too much for me. It's
okay.
Very scary, especially if I don't have a buddy. Like, I can't do it by myself.
Right.
I would need a friend to hold my hand and tell me it's going to be okay.
I'm sorry.
This is how The Walking Dead goes in my house. I hear a TV show in the other room, and it sounds like a completely normal TV show. And then at some point in every episode, the volume goes up like 3 decibels, and everyone's screaming. It's
what?
Just like this
you know.
Slaughter, and everyone's screaming, and it's horrible.
Yeah.
And then I just get up and shut the door. So that's why. Yeah.
Let's chat for 3 episodes in a row. Wait, this is a zombie show, right? I heard zombies show up at some point.
God,
that's my impression. Anyway, Crystal.
All right. Well, something completely different. So, 2013. It is the 25th anniversary of Q Lazarus's haunting and timeless dance track, "Goodbye Horses." Now, for those of you that have no idea what song I'm talking about, you've probably seen Silence of the Lambs, and you remember that unforgettable scene with Buffalo Bill. So Goodbye Horses is the song that accompanied that scene. Mon Ami Records is reissuing that 1988 original track in a limited edition 12-inch vinyl. 1,500 copies is probably already sold out. But it's backed by an achingly beautiful, newly recorded cover of Goodbye Horses. And singing it is Hayden Thorpe of the Wild Beasts, one of my favorite bands, and I've mentioned him on this podcast before. And he's accompanied on piano by producer John Hopkins. So we're going to link up in the show notes. PopMatters.com did a little feature about the anniversary and announcing this reissue with the cover so you can listen yourself. But I really like it. But I am taking Mike's time now for his tickling fancy this week.
Take your time. I'm just going to kick back, think of things. Just to show a little how the sausage is made, one of the possible topics this week could have been Comic-Con. And when I heard that, I thought of, hey, maybe I could list some comics that whenever they come downstairs, I immediately put holds on. Oh, yes. Must have. First one, this could be like quick synopsis, no spoiler, you know, a couple sentences a piece. Okay. So first one is called Fatale. We got the third volume this week. Very excited. The first trade. I mean, basically, initial storyline, a guy inherits from his dead uncle a book that he was writing that he didn't know. You know, his uncle used to be a writer, then he stopped suddenly for no reason. And the book that he's been writing for the past, like, 50 years. He starts reading it, and it starts, like, you know, craziness starts getting in his life. You know, there's this, like, immortal Hollywood starlet. There's Lovecraftian creepy cultists. It's like a cross between noir and, like, Lovecraft, and very cool. The next one is called The Manhattan Projects, which is ridiculous. It's like the house of alternate history. Basically, the idea is that the Manhattan Project was a cover-up for the real projects that were happening, including trans-dimensional travel and aliens. And apparently all physicists were actually like weird superpowered beings.
Well, that's not true. The first part was.
You know, like, was it – I forget his name, but one of the guys is like an atomic skeleton who walks around with like this like glass jar for like covering his head and like
– oh, that's my dad.
Very cool. I had to meet that guy, but I can't shake his hand. There's like a cyborg Werner von Braun. There's Robert Oppenheimer as a cannibal. And they lock up Einstein for most of the first trade paperback because he's too dangerous to be left out. It's very weird.
Scary.
It is very, you know, I call it, ever done here. It's Real Life Physicist as the Watchman as drawn by Adult Swim. The next one is American Vampire. Very cool. Like, basically, the gist is that there are a zillion different kinds of breeds of vampires, but there aren't any in the New World. Like, so a bunch of these European vampires come over and try to take over, and eventually they accidentally create the American Vampire, a new breed that is immune to sunlight.
And likes football.
Yes.
Doesn't
like soccer.
was Stephen King involved with
yes,
that?
Yes, the
very first one. Okay.
Yeah, he
read
the very
you
first
one. You and I read it, didn't we, Bill?
Yeah. Okay.
Dug it. Yeah.
I really thought it was like super cool, and apparently we haven't ordered the fourth or fifth trades yet, so I'm going to use my limited clout. Hey, guys, read the series and really like it, and then demand the fourth and fifth trades so I don't have to buy it. And lastly...
You might in our library loan it.
Oh, yeah.
We have enough clout to probably get that bought.
The illing.
Us, you know that. Let the people think that they have the power. Okay.
That's right. Don't let them know the truth. And, Mary Larry, last one is called Incognito. And that is one line. A supervillain joins the witness protection program. Hilarity ensues.
Radical.
Take
and
away,
then
Ryan.
After that, you can read the Byboy biography. It'll be a fun night. So at the very beginning, when you were talking about Fatal Volume 3, you dropped the term trade. So yeah. Tell non-book nerds what a trade is.
That's when you collect an entire storyline of a series into one trade paperback.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, the I like it because it looks nice on a bookshelf.
Yeah.
And I have no idea what to do with, like, those single, like, oh, good, I've got one comic. What do I do with this?
I like it because it takes 5 minutes to read a comic, but it might take 20 minutes to read a trade.
So yeah. Yeah. There's
I get a little into it a little bit more than...
And you don't have to, like, read ads for, like, Grit and Charles Atlas.
Totally. You know, before there were, quote-unquote, graphic novels, us old dudes used to go buy trade paperbacks where you get all bunch of comics in one. Now
kids these days.
They said they don't call them that anymore, but, you know, we know it's a trade. Folk
right.
Show.
Enough said.
Enough said?
Ha-ha.
Are we done?
All right. Official month, no prize.
What? You just totally confused me.
I'm totally going into, like, Marvel, like, you know, nerd lore. Then.
I don't know. Forget it, man.
Stan Lee's, like, catchphrase for a while was just enough said. And he said at the end of everything.
Mm. Yeah. Remember it well.
Yeah.
Cool. No, it's not cool. It's nerdy.
Says you.
You waiting for me to go?
Yeah, I thought you were going
to
say something.
I thought you were going to pitch it to me.
Oh, hey, Brian.
Oh, yeah. I've given you
I'm just ignoring each one.
You're going to learn, too, man.
Swing and a miss, man.
You're going to learn, too, not to do four, like, in 1 month, because next month you're going to be like, what am I going to talk about? I was reading four different comics, and then I'm talking about all four of them at once.
No, I like TV.
Yes, sir. Have you heard about Afternoons? They're Sunny.
What? What was that a reference to?
No, I'm just saying, like, I go outside and the sun's nice outside.
It was a reference to weather.
Yeah. Clouds. Keep me low nimbus versus.
So confused.
I think Brian's paranoid since we recorded a podcast without him.
Yeah.
My cat's doing really good. I started feeding him early in the morning again, and now he doesn't wake us up at night. It's awesome. So... tickling my fancy. As I said earlier, what I was rotting my brain with instead of reading, you know, classic 20th century literature was this rapper Riff Raff. So I have this ongoing odyssey, like guilty pleasure white rappers thing. But Riff Raff is this train wreck that I cannot look away from. So he's this rapper from Houston, and he made a career just by posting YouTube videos of himself on YouTube. And first, he managed to talk his way into this really crappy, horrible MTV reality show called G's to Gents, where they took, like, guys from the street and tried to make them, like, into, like, straight, polite people. He got kicked off in the second episode because he basically was like, F you, I'm not changing, right? But since then, he's just started posting his own rap videos on YouTube, and he's built his career about it. But he's one of these guys that's, like, just a total nut. He's never serious. He's just, like, just completely wacky all the time. Always says things that are, like, either completely stupid or brilliant, depending on your take on it, right? He's a white dude, but he has zigzag cornrows. He has, like, colorful tattoos all over himself, including, like, MTV logo on his neck. Because when he first started, he went by the name MTV Riff Raff, because that's how he got famous, being on a crappy MTV reality show for two episodes. But then really, like, more notoriously, he also has the BET logo on his chest. because people are like, so why did you do that? He's like, that's where I'm going to be. I'm going to be on MTV. I'm going to be on BET. And then, like,
so then he's got the books are only half the story.
Exactly. Exactly.
You made it to the podcast. Yeah.
And then, like, his clothes, he always dresses in, like, tank top and shorts, but it's always, like, super bright neon colors with, like, cartoon characters. It's always, like, 1989 on acid. It's, like, you know, just super crazy bright colors all the time. And if you're like, what is this guy like? Well, James Franco's character Alien in Spring Breakers was based on Riff Raff. And I think Harmony Korine actually wanted Riff Raff to be in the movie, but he just couldn't get him to be in the movie. So that's what he's like. And he doesn't have the best flow in the world, but, like, individually his lyrics are really simple, but they're actually, like, really funny and very witty. He actually reminds me of Lil Wayne. It's actually, like, it's so dumb, it's brilliant. And I think Lil Wayne has always reminded me of Elvis. So now in my head I have this weird thing. It's like I think of, like, Lil Wayne and Elvis and Riff Raff and Johnny Cash together are this weird, like, triangle in my head, which I don't think that makes sense for anyone else. So he's never actually had a record deal. He just puts out YouTube videos, and he's done hundreds of them. He's also put out a lot of mixtapes, you know, on the internet, and the newer ones are actually pretty good, and the one that I'd recommend, and maybe I'll link to it because you can download it for free, is Holographic Panda. Dame Grease was the producer on that one, and Dame Grease is a really famous hip-hop producer who mostly doesn't use samples. You know, he just builds beats with keyboards and drum machines. He doesn't loop anything or sample anything. And that Holographic Panda mixtape with the Riff is actually really funny and a really good record. As you can hear on this track, Tiger Bear Gargoyle.
Gargoyle. She came in the club looking like a tiger bear.
It looks like kill. Homicide. Let me know about the extra baggage. Drama side. Know you had your heart broke about a thousand times. Maybe this'll cheer you up. Roller coaster ride. Pat a stage park. Your body work of art. Now we're in colonial time. Stagecoach ride after dark. Take your shoes off. Get comfortable. You can let your hair down. Rapunzel.
And what's so funny about that is, and I didn't put in the hook, the chorus about the tiger bear and the gargoyle, but it's like he wants to use the images of the tiger bear and the image of the gargoyle in the same song, so he just, like, mashes them together, and he doesn't care that it's this crazy mixed metaphor the whole way through. So there's all this debate about whether his persona is real or not, because he's so nuts all the time, and he is a white dude. You know, like, are you for real? Like, you know, where are you from? And then, of course, there's other people, like, the other debate about, like, well, does it matter if he's for real? He's an entertainer, right? He makes videos, right? Does it matter if this is a character or not? So a few months ago, he has this interview on Hot 97, which is, like, the biggest hip-hop radio station in New York, right? So it's like he's finally he's hustled people on YouTube enough to get in the doors of Hot 97, right, to get an interview. And Ebro, the program director there, it's basically an ambush interview. Ebro, the program director, just nails him, like, hey, he wants to know, are you fake? Are you for real? Like, I love hip-hop. I've dedicated my life to hip-hop, and you're just making fun of it, you know? So Riff Raff, he kept his cool. You know, he didn't get angry back. He just answered all his questions. And then they're like, okay, man, hey, do you want to freestyle live on air? Because sometimes they ask rappers to do that. Riff Raff's, yeah, sure, I will. So he does one of his, like, stupid, inane rhymes that sort of makes sense, sort of doesn't. And it's like, okay. And the guy isn't impressed. You know, the grumpy guy isn't impressed. But I was impressed that Riff Raff is like, yeah, sure, I'll freestyle, even though you obviously set me up, you know, to do the interview. But what was really great after that is Riff Raff's record label got a DJ to screw and chop that freestyle that he did, then they released it as a free download. And if you listen to the slowed down, screwed and chopped version, it actually is really, it's like I said, he's really smart. It's really funny. Like, what he came up with on the fly is actually, it's totally in character. He weaves all these themes together. There's some good rhymes, and it was really, really cool. And of course, his record label that I mentioned is actually Mad Decent, which is run by Diplo. So who finally gave Riff Raff a record deal was Diplo, who has helped so many new artists come up and make cool tracks. So in the fall, probably at the end of August, early September, Riff Raff's first official record produced by Diplo, or at least some of the tracks, will come out. And it's called Neon Icon, so I'm waiting for it. So instead of reading The Memoirs of Hadrian, I was spending my vacation watching Riff Raff videos on YouTube.
I preferred his original hit, Lion, Elephant, Yeti.
He would rake that song. So, that's all I got. Is that the whole show?
I can tell my Stan Lee story, but
yeah, tell it.
Stan Lee story. Yeah, he's always cool.
Did you get arrested?
No.
That's a big
one. Whoa! I was at Excelsior from 100 feet away. True believer.
Was at Comic Con one year in San Diego. He was staying on the same floor as I was, and we were getting on the elevator together. I didn't say anything; didn't make a big deal. But when we got on, there were these girls on there, and they just started giggling. And he goes, "Well, what's so funny?" And they just said, "Well, we're happy to see you," and said, "Can we take your picture?" He was a very nice man, you know. He just played along with it, but that was my brush with Stan Lee.
Cool.
My completely unrelated story is that they did a study about which fans of which musicians are the smartest, and Lil Wayne's fans were the dumbest fans on the whole survey.
Awesome.
Oh yeah.
Beethoven won. His fans were the smartest, which, you know, duh.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Wow.
But Lil Wayne didn't do so hot.
I'm going to put it right out right now. I love Lil Wayne, for the most part.
Isn't it Lil?
Lil.
Yeah, I thought it was Lil.
I'm not
from that zip code. So Lil Wayne is like Riff Raff. I think that he puts out records by record labels just to get paid. And then all his other material, he just releases like as mixtapes, you know? So, and I don't think he writes lyrics beforehand. Like, he just improvises, right? So if he's very prolific in releasing all these mixtapes, some of them are really good, you know, and some of them are not so good. I like that. When Lil Wayne's at his best, Elvis, Lil Wayne.
See the
that's Usher.
Yeah. Okay. Or is that the other little guy?
Lil John.
Right.
Yeah.
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 And there's one last thing that we need to talk about. Crystal, is the library going to have a seed library thing?
Yes. That will happen in winter 2014.
That is so far away. Never mind. Okay. So if you want more information, you can go to
www.library.nashville.org.
Org.
Bill got it right.
Tremendous.
105 episodes and he finally got it.
You don't have
to
Google it this time.
But you can if you want to.
And the podcast got its own slide on the library's
page
today.
Yes, I saw that.
Because we're cool like that.
Awesome, yeah.
Yeah, everybody run out and get your tattoos of our logo.
I'm going to get two.
Thank you.
Like the time tunnel. Go ahead. That's an obscure 60.
It's a time tunnel. Cool.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Let's watch that in sci-fi.
Yes. You know what I'm talking about.
Thank you, web team, for putting up a slide. Now, we do need a new logo. So that's on the agenda for...
Oh, so you shouldn't get your tattoo just yet.
Yeah, don't get your tattoo.
Pop-matic podcast. We kick ass.
That'd be cool. I'm down with that.
So it's been like 5 years or something. We finally get maybe another 5 years we'll get a logo.
We have a logo.
We have a logo, but it's been...
I missed that part.
It is 5 years old. Yeah. So, and actually, I think the slide that's up there now looks like the font of our logo, like the text, and then like zoomed in on one little, like 1/8 of what the logo is.
Circle.
Yeah.
Right.
I'll point it out to you. I'll send you a link. I'm like that. I'm an information professional.
Whoa.
Amateur.
Me, too.
Yeah. Sounds familiar. I have to look at my diploma for that.
Mine doesn't say that.
That's a long outro. If you keep that on there.
Yeah, it's really long.
It's okay, no one's listening.
That's
amazing.
That's amazing.
This is awesome.